And this is Chito, and welcome to the Nurse Hokage Podcast Season 2. Hello and welcome to the Nurse Hokage Podcast, where we explore unique stories and themes of nursing from all over the world. Each episode will dive deep into the key areas of nursing and discuss the latest trends and insights and perspectives. Whether you are a seasoned expert or just starting out, our goal is to provide you with valuable information, practical advice, and inspiring stories that will help you. We're excited to have you join us on this journey, and we can't wait to learn from you as well. By the way, so we'd just like to thank our loyal subscribers and followers that we had crossed 37,000 podcast downloads across 57 countries around the globe in all podcast platforms, maybe it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout. Also, we have grown the community of almost 500,000 followers and likes on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Again, to all our nurse subscribers around the globe, thank you for being part of this community and for your unwavering commitment to the health and well-being of others. Let's continue to share our knowledge, experiences, and wisdom and elevate the nursing profession together. So let's get started and dive into today's episode. Today's episode is more inclined to mental health. And I am very fortunate to have a guest on mental health. He is one of my colleagues and friends. I will not take it long. This is Chris Acebo. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having me.
How are you, Chris?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. And you?
I'm really fine. Actually, this is my first solo flight on an episode of the podcast. My co-host Champ is unfortunately not available today, and he'll be coming back soon on the next episode. So, how are you, Chris? How is it going?
Yeah, I'm good. I guess same old. just doing a lot of coaching and also working with freelance clients. So, you know, I know this is a podcast on the Nurse Hokage Podcast. So a lot of our viewers and listeners are nurses. Brief background. Yeah, we used to be colleagues, and then I decided to part ways with the profession. For personal reasons.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I've been on that path for, I think, 9-10 years already.
So it's been a while. Oh my God. Was that 10 years ago already?
Time flies.
Because they're quite quick. Chris, can you introduce your Mental Arsenal podcast?
Yeah. So I run my own show. It's called the Mental Arsenal Podcast. So just a quick background for our viewers and listeners who don't know much about me. I am a mindset and productivity coach, and I work with online freelancers and entrepreneurs. And I primarily focus on the mental side of things. I love talking about everything that pertains, you know, the mind and the brain, and, you know, how that affects so many things in our life. There's so many things to talk about when it comes to mental health, mindset, et cetera. So my podcast is all about that. You know, I am also a neuro-linguistic programming practitioner.
I didn't know that. No. So do you do a lot of yoga, Chris?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow.
So there's plenty of healing modalities, really. But even though I focus on the mental aspect of things, I think even in modern nursing and, you know, in health and wellness, in the health and wellness industry in general, now there's this approach of like a holistic approach. There's a holism approach, right? So it's not just about mental health. Like, of course, that's important, but it's also important to look at the other aspects of our lives. Mm-hmm. That includes our physical health, that includes our emotional health and our spiritual health, as well as other aspects like our relationships with other people and our career, our business, our finances, as well as recreation and fun. So mental health is just one aspect, but, you know, I like to go deep with those topics.
All right. So, Chris, can you talk about nursing and where your journey in nursing? And, you know, because for the listeners, me and Chris were, we started as, I knew Chris back in university we were classmates. Oh my god, more than 10 years already, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah. My god.
And yeah, so we started uni around 2008 and we graduated around 2012. And yeah, we shared a lot of memories together, including hospital duties, classroom classroom memories. And then after graduating, we applied for a job in a hospital and we started as trainees, isn't it, Chris? And the training,
graduate training.
That's it. And how many months was the training, Chris?
I think it was 6 months. You're 6 months probationary and then you become a regular.
All right. So can you talk about why did you become a nurse and why did you study nursing and, you know?
Yeah.
And it's quite a mystery for me, actually, until this day, on why you, like, left us.
Sure.
I could still remember. I was still working in the wards. We were both in the wards, and then after like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I heard the news that Chris already resigned. Oh, I was like, what? So can you talk about it, Chris? If it's all right with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to motivation, like, nursing was not actually my first choice. I think for a lot of Filipinos, I think I speak on the majority's behalf that, you know, back in the day, nursing was like a path to working abroad. And that's not to say that that's a bad aim to have. And, you know, I think people choose the profession for practical reasons, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I got into nursing, and one of the reasons it has to be nursing was it was my uncle who financed my schooling, and he would not allow me to take any other course about nursing. But what was interesting, though, is that
as I could remember, Chris was a very, how do you call that? He is very scholastic, very knowledgeable guy. And he is always on top of everything, as I could remember. That's how I know Chris. And he is really, it's not that competitive, but he always makes sure that he studies well. And he knows everything that are discussed with regards to lectures, examinations, and everything. That's how I knew you, Chris.
Yeah, and that was the thing, though. Like, even if nursing was not my first choice, when I got into, like, uni, I eventually actually fell in love with nursing. It was so weird. I think I love the healing aspect of it. I think something really resonated with me. I think a really funny story I can recall is, like, growing up as a kid, like, whenever I would play computer games and whatever, I always resonated with those characters who are healers.
The support roles.
And I think that kind of, like, bled into adulthood. Mm. And so, yeah, nursing really resonated with me. I loved learning all the concepts, and it really is a nice mental exercise. It's a, to me, you know, going to the school we went to, Xavier, the training was very tough. So in addition to, like, the intellectual, like, academic training, like, really the emotional, you know, resilience that we learned through throughout those 4 years was really next level. Yeah, and, you know, the grid, and just, like, it was tough going through, you know, Xavier, but you come out of the experience like a really developed person. Like, you're, like, ready for, you know, the professional life. You're ready for adult life. I think, you know, that's the benefit of it. And I think we can also just, like, as a segue, like, use that or apply that into the challenges that we encounter in our lives. Like, if something's really hard, like, and we go through it, we don't look away, we come out to the other side, like, better persons. Like, we're more mature, we learn new lessons, etc. So anyways, about nursing. So yeah, I'm sure it was nice that you mentioned that I was very like academic. That was the reason I fell in love with the course, and so learning, studying, it was not actually something I felt obligated to do. It was just fun. Like I would spend like weekends studying. It was so funny because I would remember one summer where we didn't have any classes. Like it was a free summer, and I was studying because I just love it. I really enjoy it, you know. So I love learning and applying it. You know, once you're in the field, getting to apply that, it's really nice.
You know what, Chris? I was not wrong to label you as academic in the first place.
Yeah, and so postgraduate. Before we went postgraduate training, I was looking. Oh no, actually, when we were waiting for the board exam results, I think it was like we wait for a couple of months to get the results. I was already looking for possible work, like ways to earn money, because I was the eldest of six.
All right.
I am the eldest of six. So I was like looking for ways to earn money, and that's how I discovered like freelancing, working online. And then eventually, you know, we had to do the postgraduate training, so that cut short. And yeah, we did that postgraduate training. It was for 6 months, and to me, like, I loved the nursing profession, actually. Like it, I miss it some days, but I feel like because I'm so academic, I think when it comes to being in the field, like that translates as being an idealist. Like, I like seeing things in textbook. Like, I like seeing the ideal, you know, stuff being implemented. And I guess, like, for me, one of my frustrations was just, like, being overloaded with patients. And it really just sucked the marrow out of life for me. Because, like, what I really enjoyed, the aspects I enjoy with the job, it's like being with patients. Like I love being with patients. I love learning about them. I love building relationships with them. Right. I love teaching them, like really. And so when it got to a point where we were like handling, I don't know, 10, 15, almost 20 patients, even though, I mean, that sounds like a lot, but you know, I worked at the executive ward and, you know, the cases are a bit mild, so it's not like that extreme, but still, I think the quality of patients that I had to cater to took away the quality of care that I wanted to deliver. All right. And, you know, slowly and slowly, kind of like the joy of the job was no longer there. And, you know, so I guess when I got to the fifth month, where I was approaching the sixth month, like about to be regularized, I had to make a decision, like, do I stay or leave? You know, if I stay, like, it'll be much harder to leave after that 6 month, you know, once I'm regularized. So I feel like I have an easy out during probation, during the probation. Right. So I was like, it was not an impulsive decision. It got bottled up. It accumulated over weeks until I kind of like, okay, like, this is not for me. And I just have to, I feel like I can still contribute to health promotion, health prevention in some other way. And I feel like I do that now, you know, as a coach, like helping people around, you know, mindset and mental health, et cetera.
So Chris, you've said that you've got the decision, yeah? And so you contemplated on it for like months. So what was the turning point? Like, were you, did you consult someone or did you talk to someone? Were you looking for a sign or something like that? Mm-hmm. Or it was just an overnight, like, thinking?
It's a combination of things. Like, I definitely consulted my parents.
Yeah.
I definitely, like, asked for permission to, like, I don't want to do this anymore. Some close friends. And, also, like, I think the breaking point was really, I think, reaching some form of burnout, like just feeling tired, like maybe not physically, but more like emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, really just feeling so drained in those areas and, you know, getting to a point of feeling like it's not worth it, you know?
Okay. So did you have regrets on leaving, Chris?
would say no.
It's been years already.
Yeah.
Have you thought have you thought about what could have been
if you did...
That's
sometimes. I mean, I think we all do that. And you know, that was a major decision. It was a life-changing decision.
Yeah.
You know, it changed the trajectory of my life. And to me, I feel like I have no regrets. And it's one of the pivotal moments in my life. I feel like that was a very important decision. And how my life have unfolded in the last decade, that was not the turning point. That was really,
you know what, Chris,
point.
When you sorry to butt in. When you say 10 years or decade, it is mind-blowing. I haven't really already 10 years. It feels like just yesterday, like 2 years or something.
God, we're so old. Weird. Yeah. Well, age is a mental state. So let's stay young at heart.
Yeah. Okay. Come on.
Yeah. So I think I think I have no regrets because like. For me, one of my personal values is like family, and one of the I think the benefits of like making that decision was like getting to be with my family and not having to go abroad to work. And not that going abroad is bad or anything. I'm not labeling. It's definitely works for majority of the people. And I think, like, when I reflect on it, I think it's really just an issue of alignment, like, what aligns with me. And to me, that career path of, you know, working abroad, it didn't really, like, click. A part of me, like, really just wanted to stay, be close to my parents, be close to my siblings, build a life here somehow, make it work. And I can still travel, but not to work, just for leisure. And yeah, I think... turned out pretty okay. Like, I'm very happy with how things turned out. But you know, yeah, definitely there are moments where, you know, I would think about, like, what could have happened. I'm not attached to, you know, I don't feel like regret is something it doesn't feel appropriate. But I'm just curious about what could have happened.
Yeah.
But as it is, like, as it stands, like, I feel good about that decision.
Oh, thank you for that, Chris. That was like, now I know. Because something was hanging for the last 10 years. I didn't know that. What was your reason and everything. Thank you for that. So what are we going to talk today, Chris?
Yeah, mental health, right?
How to improve our mental health as a nurse.
Yeah.
So as a nurse, it's important to take care of our mental health because if we have... a stable mental health or healthy mental health, we can provide the best care to our patients. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And not just to our patients, like, you know, with us too. Like, I think, like, that's one of the most intimate things you can work on. Like, your mental health, like, that's not something you see. Like, it's not your body, right? It's in your head. And that's something that, you know, sometimes a lot of people have a lot of silent battles just inside their heads. And it wreaks havoc into their life, in their practice, in their relationship. So it's definitely important topic to talk about.
So first tip that we can give to the nurses is take breaks. Make sure that we take breaks because throughout our day or our work day, to rest and to recharge and to refocus our mind is quite important. We can use this time to maybe engage in some activities that you enjoy and that or take a moment to relax your mind to help you regain the focus that you need for the next day or weeks. So how important is taking breaks, Chris, for you to improve your mental health?
I mean, super important. Like when you think about work, right? Or just performance, the word performance, like I use that terminology for like, you know, people use in sports psychology or sports coaching. It's like you need, and even like I think to make this more pragmatic, you know, going to the gym. You know, when you go to the gym, you need rest days.
I could relate to that one.
Right?
Yeah.
And it is in those rest days where your muscles grow. So it's very important to take breaks. It's so easy to overlook, though, the importance of taking a break. So there's this like ebb and flow. There's this, you know, rising and then falling. It's like work and then rest. I mean, the thing, though, is like if we don't prioritize, you know, taking a break and taking adequate rest, we will be forced by the body to take that rest in the form of illness or disease. Like we get sick. And that's just the body signal of like, stop working. Like, yeah, don't do that's anything. Right. And I think also something I want to mention around breaks is that a lot of people have weird notions about what taking a break means. So to me, like a real break is really disengaging the mind. I think a lot of people, you know, tend to treat, you know, being on social media, you know, staying on their phone, like infinite thumb scrolling on their social media feeds, you know, watching Netflix all day, things like that. Those don't actually allow the brain to recharge. So what makes a good break? That can include like taking a longer sleep or taking naps.
I love that.
Taking a walk outside, socializing, you know, with your friends, reading a good book, meditating, journaling, things like that. So be careful when you say like break, like, you know, be careful what that means, because it might not actually serve you if you're just like on your phone all day. Like, I'm sure you've noticed this, that when you're on your phone all day, like you actually feel more tired, you feel more drained. And the longer you're on your gadgets, and studies have proven this, you actually get like increased chances of getting feelings of anxiety and depression. So making sure as much as we can that we're on our breaks, that we're off our devices.
All right. Thank you for that, Chris. And I think if you take breaks as well, Chris, you eventually, if you're quite rested, you increase your productivity and increase or improve your creativity. And if you're quite rested, you can focus more. So because sometimes when you're working like long hours, you tend to be working like robots. It's like working for the sake of working, not for the sake of, you know.
I was just gonna say, like, we can use the metaphor of our phone batteries. Like, our phone gets drained the more we use it, just like our body. Like, when we engage in work, you know, throughout the day, that gets drained, and we need to, just like our phone, charge our body. And how we do that is through breaks. And we need to take breaks really seriously.
Yeah, correct. So for you, Chris, how do you spend your time taking breaks? How do you spend the break?
Yeah.
Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
I love reading books. Like, I could spend all day
reading books. I know. I've seen that you have a mini library in your in your room.
Yeah. All right. I love books.
And so what are you reading right now?
Right now, I read plenty of books concurrently, but I'm rereading a book on brain blocks. It's called Brain Blocks. And some other book on creativity. It's called The Artist's Way. It's about writing. Yeah, and I also like to go outdoors. I like to go biking. I like to jog. And when you're very intentional about it, like, social media can be a form of break. That's the fine print, though. You have to be very intentional. Like, it should not be a mindless scrolling. You know, I like watching Netflix. I like watching movies, too. But it's like it's a conscious consumption. It's not like a mindless, like, you know, all of a sudden it's the end of the day and I'm like, I finished the whole series. Like, we need to be intentional about what we do on the breaks.
It's quite interesting, though. I like going to the gym, Chris. That's my that's my break. It helps me. I love running. It helps me regain my focus. You know, just running and meditating about life. And I do yoga as well. Nice. Yoga is really nice, isn't it? And
I love it.
It's nice. Yeah. Hopefully we can do yoga someday.
Yeah, absolutely.
So after taking a break, the next tip we can give to the nurses is to seek support. How important is seeking support? Connecting with friends and families or colleagues who can provide like emotional support and understanding can help us on our mental health. We may also consider speaking with mental health professionals, isn't it, Chris? And it is important that seeking support, if we seek support, we can manage and overcome challenges that may be affecting our well-being.
Yeah,
how? Absolutely. Why is it important to seek support, Chris, for you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's important, definitely, because there's a lot of things in our lives that cannot be accomplished alone. Like, we know that, you know, it takes a village to actualize our potential and to perform at our best. You know, if we synonymize, you know, seek support with something else, it just synonymizes with asking for help. You know, seeking support is just asking for help, which is interesting, though, because a lot of people really struggle with asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us in adulthood, you know, or maybe throughout our younger years, we have been so trained to be so to individuate, you know, to be so too self-reliant. Like, self-reliance is good, but we need to know when it's appropriate to ask for help. So it's definitely so important.
Do you remember our training with ACLS, Chris, or BLS, when you remember when we saw someone, and you know, in the streets or someone, you're alone, we need to ask for help, isn't it? We need to call someone to help us. It's just like our mental health as well. If we can't take it anymore, or you have questions lingering, you have friends, family members, support groups that you can go to and ask for help. Maybe they have unique solutions to your queries or your problems that can eventually help you with what you're going through right now.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think you put it very nicely there. Just really asking for help. And knowing also, I think here's the thing, like acknowledging that asking for help is not weakness. Like, you're not weak.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, so no one's out there like keeping tab on like who's the most self-reliant and not needing help from anyone. Like, at some point in some area of our lives, we'll need help. We need to acknowledge that.
All right. Just like the song goes, even the best fall down sometimes. Remember,
right?
That's what the word seems to write. That's what I'm
back in the day.
Yeah, that's all. Nostalgia.
Yeah.
So after seeking support, another tip for the nurses is to practice self-care. Make time for self-care activities such as exercise, meditation, or hobbies that, you know, you enjoy. These activities can help you reduce stress and improve your well-being. How can you practice self-care, Chris? It's like more related to the first tip that we've given, like take a break. Practicing self-care is, you know, doing what you want, doing what makes you relax and you know, helps you improve your mood, reduce your stress, and promote your well-being. So can you say about practicing self-care, Chris?
Yeah, I think, of course, again, self-care is so important because, you know, as service workers, we are our own, you know, vessel. Like, so we have to take care of this body in order to operate at a high level, in order to serve our patients, and in order to help, you know, the people who are dependent to us in our lives, if we're like providing for our family or anyone who is dependent on us. Like, in order for us to keep doing that, we need to stay in top shape. And like you said earlier, like doing things like regular exercise, proper diet, adequate sleep, like that's what self-care is. I do want to add, and probably say this as a caution to people, is that we need to be careful that when we're doing self-care, or some people would call it self-love, that it's not self-hatred masquerading as self-love. Now, what do I mean by this? You know, this can mean like, because I think people can do things that don't serve their own like health and betterment under the guise of like self-care. Like, for example, they'll eat junk food or food that are not healthy, or like they'll be a couch potato and be lazy for a day because that's self-care. So we need to be careful about that line of thinking, right? And how do you know if something is like self-hatred masquerading as self-care, or what's genuine self-care? You'll know because, you know, these self-hatred masquerading as self-care, they have negative consequences. And, you know, true self-care has beneficial consequences. So, for example, self-hatred, you know, eating whatever you want, you know, in the guise of self-care. Now, this is not to say I'm not giving you permission to indulge in some of your favorite foods occasionally, but like doing it often enough in the guise of self-care, like eating, you know, pizza every day because self-care, or, you know, like eating ice cream every night because self-care, or like watching Netflix like for 8 hours because self-care, like those have, you know, if you really think about it, like if you keep eating unhealthy foods in the name of self-care, like they will have negative consequences. But if you eat like proper diet, you know, if you exercise regularly, if you get adequate sleep, if you read a good book, if you maintain healthy relationships, like those have beneficial effects. So that's how to distinguish one from the other, which I feel is very important.
All right. Thank you for that, Chris. Now I know the difference between what the real self-care is. No, yeah. It must be like,
maybe we can add so that it's a refinement from the first idea, right, which is taking a break. Maybe like to make this its own point stand out, we can talk about self-care as mental care. So practice mental care. Right. So how you do that, like, yeah, maybe we can talk in the later points, but yeah, it all goes down to like self-talk, you know, how do we talk to ourselves? What's our self-image? What's our level of self-esteem? What's our self-regard? You know, how do we look at ourselves? Those are really important.
Because I think the aim of, you know, practicing self-care is to not only improve reduce stress, improve the mood, but also enhance our self-esteem.
Yeah.
And eventually prevent burnout. And another tip for the nurses will be set boundaries. It's quite interesting, Chris, isn't it? It's important to set clear boundaries between our life, our work life, and personal life to avoid burnout. This can include setting limits on your work hours, saying no to additional work requests, or eventually avoiding taking work home with you. What's your take about setting boundaries, Chris? How important is it?
Yeah, sure. So I think to summarize it, you said the keywords earlier, saying no. Like setting boundaries is really about saying no and getting good at saying no, so that when you say no, you can own your no. And at the same time, you can also own your yeses. So this is very important, and I think it's very relevant, especially culturally, as you know, Asians, especially, you know, in the Philippines, Filipinos, we are terrible with boundaries because we are a culture of like very fearful of assertion. Like we're afraid of asserting ourselves. We're afraid of like, because we're such people pleasers, we don't want to disappoint people. So instead of saying no, we're yes people. We just say yes to whatever. To avoid, you know, conflict, to avoid, you know, any sort of aggression, whatever, you know, at the cost of our own, like, mental health, physical health, emotional health, etc. So definitely, like, learn the art of saying no. That's what setting boundaries really is.
Yeah, when you set boundaries as well, Chris, for me, you are sending a message to yourself that your time, energy, or emotional well-being are more valuable and you deserve to be more protected. And when you have and sometimes when you have clear boundaries around your time and energy, you're less likely to waste time on activities that you are not productive or fulfilling.
And even in the workplace, like even professionally speaking, when you set boundaries and when you master the art of saying no, contrary to what we may believe, people actually respect us more when we say no.
Because we're
afraid to say no because we feel like, oh, we'll disappoint them and, you know, they won't respect us. But the opposite is actually true. When we say no to things that are not our priorities, and when we are honest with our reasons, and when we own the no, people actually respect us more.
Yeah, I could still remember I read a book like years ago, The Art of Saying No. That was very, very, very nice book. It's just centered on how to, you know, set boundaries and how to eventually look after yourself. So another, how do you call that? Another tip for our nurses after setting boundaries is to practice mindfulness. For me, mindfulness is a technique that involves paying attention to the present moment and accepting it without judgment. You know, practicing mindfulness can help you eventually reduce stress or improve your overall mental health. How do you practice mindfulness, Chris?
Yeah, there's so many ways to do it. I think the key word when it comes to mindfulness is just awareness or consciousness. Like, are you aware? And you said it earlier, like being mindful of the present moment. So and that's another key word too, like presence. Like, you know, that can really help us minimize our anxieties and our depressions. Like, you know, when it comes to depression, it's usually past-oriented. It's usually us thinking about past regrets and stuff. And when it comes to anxieties, it's usually oriented towards the future. Like, we're fearful about something bad might happen, etc. But when we are present, you know, our mind is outside of those past rumination and future anxieties. And it will become fully present. And in the present, you can only feel gratitude and peace. So how do you practice mindfulness? Again, there's so many ways to do this. But one of the most effective ways is to just notice your breath. You know, notice the flow of air through the nose. You know, notice the air filling your lungs. Notice your chest expanding. Notice all the physical changes. You know, breathing is something that we do automatically. You know, the limbic system takes care of that, but we can bring our mind, we can bring our awareness or consciousness towards that function. Like, we can slow down the breath, right? So that's one way to practice mindfulness.
It's like meditation, you know, as well, isn't it, Chris?
It's similar to meditation, yes. There is such a thing as mindfulness meditation. And even just in your day-to-day, just being fully present, you know, when you're eating your lunch, you know, really tasting the food.
That's the one,
really tasting the texture, you know, the
temperature. Eating slowly.
Eating slowly,
Enjoying, enjoying your food. That's what they always say. Enjoying what you're eating.
Or when you're having a conversation with someone. Like, being there, like, really listening. You know, a lot of people just hear these days. They don't really listen. They're just hearing to prepare what they're gonna say next. They don't really listen on a deep level. So just like being there, you know, that's very powerful. Anything else? Like, I guess so.
There's a lot actually. But just want to add, by practicing mindfulness, you know, Chris, you can develop, you know, sense of contentment, gratitude, and appreciation for the present moment, which can really help your mental health. Just for example, you know, sometimes I would really, at the end of the day, I go to the gym and do my thing. And when I go home, I would just sit and then, you know, just quite meditate for a good 10 minutes and just absorbing everything that had happened during the day. And, you know, being appreciative on what you have learned throughout the day, and being thankful for, you know, the learnings and the experiences and everything that has happened in your life really improved.
And, you know,
not only your mental health, but your whole well-being.
I love that. And I think, like, to me, what that brings up is, like, just really taking a pause. Slowing down.
Just relax.
You know, when you get home, like, just relaxing and, you know, not let the world collapse on you. And focus on the good things, focus on the present moment, and, you know, things you're grateful for.
That's it.
Definitely.
That was good. So another tip that we could give to the nurses is how to improve your mental health is to stay organized. So keeping yourself organized by using tools such as to-do list or making yourself a calendar of activities to stay on top of your work responsibilities can eventually overwhelm reduce feelings of overwhelm and stress. How is staying organized important for you, Chris, in maintaining your mental health?
Yeah, it's very important because, like, more often than not, our environment, like our external world, affects our internal world, right? So this can mean, like, if your house is messy, if it's like, you know, if it's topsy-turvy, like that will be your internal experience as well. So it's important to develop a system for keeping things organized in your home and your work as well. Like, using those to-do lists, etc. That's very powerful as well. And I love that you mentioned overwhelm. Like, everyone's so overwhelmed these days.
Yes, you know, I know, man.
There's so much information online. Yeah. You know, there's information overload. There's decision fatigue. There's so many options to choose from. How do we get rid of that? And like you said earlier, like creating to-do lists and writing things down, that really helps. Because what that does is it unloads the brain. It goes through a process we call externalization, where we externalize whatever thoughts, you know, we have in our heads. Like if we are thinking about, like, okay, I have to do this later, I have to do this tomorrow, I have to do this next month, I have to remember myself, I have to remind myself to go to this event, this party, etc. If you hold all of those things in your head, that causes the overwhelm. But if you put it on paper, if you put it on your to-do list, if you put it in your task manager, if you put it on your calendar, right, or a sticky note, whatever, it offloads the brain and your brain is freed up to focus on other things. So that's, you know, one way to really free up your mind for more creativity, for better decision making, etc., and less stress, definitely.
You know what I've learned about in the past years, Chris, is to avoid procrastination.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes procrastination makes your how do you call that activities more disorganized. Sometimes you can't focus on like laser focus on what you're doing because in the back of your mind you had to do this one, not this one. So I guess
absolutely.
I guess in order to stay organized, you need to avoid procrastination. Thus, if you avoid those things, you'll be more organized. Thus, again, it will enhance your productivity.
You can easily
like prioritize tasks and focus on what's important and makes you less anxious.
Like putting things on paper definitely lessens procrastination, like science. You know, we're more likely to follow through on our goals when we write down our goals. So it definitely helps decrease the friction of, you know, taking action. You know, and it's nice that you mentioned procrastination, right? Because I think we're all procrastinators. All humans are procrastinators. Because that's just the wiring of our brain. Our brain is wired to conserve energy. And anything that we do, whether that's with work, even exercise, that requires an expenditure of energy, our body will try to convince itself. I'm sorry, not our body. Our mind will try to convince us that we should not do it. Well, because it prefers to save that energy. So also important to acknowledge that more often than not, procrastination is caused by, it's an emotional issue. It's not an action or implementation or execution issue. It's an emotional issue. Sometimes something is, sometimes it's mental too. Sometimes it's a mental emotional block that stops us from taking action. So it's important to get to those root causes in order to minimize procrastination in our lives. Like it's hard to eliminate procrastination like in its entirety, but we can do things, we can optimize things so that we procrastinate less. And yeah, definitely staying organized helps.
I think taking small steps as well to declutter your surroundings or prioritize your tasks, stay on top of your deadlines, you know, can help you avoid procrastination.
I love that. And I really love that key phrase you said. You said, what was that? One small thing at a time. Like that's so
small.
True. Like,
yeah,
that's
I know. That's what I had done previously, because it was really hard to like it. When you stop procrastination or avoid procrastination, it's not just like stop immediately. Because you got used to the how do you call that? You got used to doing it. It's like a habit already. So it was hard. And what I did, just small steps.
Absolutely.
It will eventually get you to where you want to be. Just try small steps. Yeah. That's for me.
Yeah, that's so right. Yeah, you know, habits, especially new habits, like if people are starting new habits, they need to acknowledge that it's not about intensity. I think a lot of people fail to form new habits, like going to the gym regularly or like journaling, whatever healthy habits they want to develop, like they struggle with it because they go for intensity right away. The key to developing habits is repetition. Right? So make it simple, like super, super simple for the first few repetitions until there's no more resistance to the task. And once the resistance is no longer there, then you can raise the intensity. Then you can run longer distances. Then you can lift heavier weights. You can stay at the gym for, I don't know, an hour. So yeah, it's all about the repetition. And yeah, that's how you develop that new habit.
I guess staying organized as well will eventually lead you to more self-discipline. Is it right, Chris?
Yeah, definitely.
In the long run.
It was a discipline, yes.
That was a good one. So another tip for the nurses is to practice gratitude. So we need to cultivate a sense of gratitude by focusing on the positive aspects of our work and life. This can help us maintain a positive outlook and reduce feelings of stress and anxiety. So how do you practice, how is practicing gratitude make your mental health more healthy, Chris?
Yeah.
I'll rephrasing it to, how can practicing gratitude benefit our mental health?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the last few years, I think it's been so popularized already. You know, gratitude, we read a lot of, you know, quotes about gratitude and sometimes just platitudes about gratitude. But yeah, it's all over the internet and it holds its own ground. Like research does back this up, that gratitude is good for our mental health. You know, gratitude is so powerful because it allows us to tell our brain to focus on the things that we already have. You know, a lot of the things that we struggle with mentally, whether that's in the things that cause anxiety or depression, are usually things that, you know, we don't already have. And gratitude snaps us out of that neurotic thinking so that it can focus on the things that we already have. Right? So when we think about, you know, just even our current state of health, you know, be grateful for that, you know, be grateful for our family, our relationships, our work, our income, our house, the food, the water, the air. There's so many things to be grateful about. And, you know, I like to believe that gratitude is a cure-all. If you have any, like, mental disturbances, if you're struggling with anything, just shift your thinking to gratitude. Like, what am I thankful for? And correct, that's how you practice it. It's really just asking that question. What am I grateful for? That can translate to just having that conversation with yourself, saying it out loud, or writing it on a journal, like writing three things you're grateful for at the start of the day or at the end of the day.
Sometimes it also reduces negative emotions, doesn't it, Chris?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
When you focus like, on your, because when you focus on the positive aspects of life, it would really reduce. Sometimes it reduces my anxiety.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm at work, even though it's just like a small thing, what my colleagues are doing, like for example, making the bed or like cleaning the table, I would always thank them. I would really always appreciate them, because sometimes because sometimes those people are going through something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you attract positive energy, you cannot. You're not only helping your mental health, but you are also influencing others to, you know, look at the positive outlook of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, bring the positive energy. Those small things can eventually can give a positive effect on of someone's life.
Yeah, I love that. You know, those small acts of kindness. Like looking at all the interactions that we have, not just like the immediate with the immediate relationships that we have, but like with every human being that we interact with, you know, the guard who opens the door, the lady at the cashier, you know, the ward man, etc. Like seeing the richness and depth of every human's life and honoring their unique story and their own struggles, like you mentioned earlier, and not making assumptions, you know, about other people. And I think one of the best ways to really spread, you know, that good energy is to express gratitude. I think that's really good.
That's good. That was nice, Chris. I love that one. Actually, in my that's one of my mantra in life, you know, practicing gratitude. That's what my co-hosts always tell me, because before, or when we were still starting, or I cannot afford this kind of thing, I would always look back when the time that I was like broke, or I was still not on my state today, and you know, be thankful of what I have. It's quite very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And we can be grateful on big things and small things.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the simplest things, just like the quenching of your thirst by the water that you drink.
You drink,
like the
immense,
the you know, the feeling of just waking up another day, like being alive.
That's it. Lord, thank you.
I love that.
And you know, to sum it all, those tips that we gave Chris, we always remember that taking care of our mental health is an ongoing process, and it is always important to prioritize self-care and seek support when you need it.
Yeah.
So what's your take, Chris? What's your take on this episode?
Podcast. I mean, I think it's a very important conversation. I think a lot, you know, mental health is often overlooked when it comes to the overall well-being of people. Like I said at the start of the call, like, you know, people can have these silent battles inside their heads, and you know, sometimes there's no open space to talk about it, you know, so it's definitely great to have these conversations, also to destigmatize, you know, mental health. Like I think a lot of people still feel very uncomfortable and queasy around feeling around like sharing, you know, their emotional and mental and psychological experiences. So it's great to be able to talk about it. I feel it's very important that we take care of our mental health. And I really love that you shared that it's an ongoing process. It's a never-ending process. Mm. Just like our own personal growth, and just like our physical health, like we need to maintain it. It's not something like you said and it's done.
Mm.
And that's why I was agreeing with you earlier that it is a discipline. And I really love that word, you know, discipline. It shares the root word with disciple. It is a mental practice. It is an attitudinal muscle. Just like you grow your muscles in the gym, you can also, you know, grow your attitudinal muscles. And that is how you take care of your mental health on an ongoing basis.
Help you more on self-reliance and being resilient. Yeah. Resilient, that's the word I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely helps with resilience, which is like bouncing back when you fall down. If you make a mistake or whatever, you have a career failure, you have a breakup, you go bankrupt, you lose money, or someone, you lose a loved one in your family. Like, yeah, bouncing back from that. Definitely having a healthy mind helps us bounce back.
All right. That was a very nice episode, Chris. I really appreciate your takes on the tips, and thank you for that.
Thank you for having me.
So Chris, just one more question. If you saw a newly graduate Chris Acebu, like person to person, right now, what will you tell him?
I would tell him to first, I'll tell him I'm so proud of him. Yep. He's awesome.
Always awesome. I know you're awesome, man. Like when you were still in college, I know that you're awesome. Your intelligence is awesome. Being academic is awesome. My God.
Sure. I mean, it has served me.
I can still remember you always, Chris is a regular visitor to the library. I can be sure of that.
I would read books outside our curriculum.
I know. I could always find you somewhere sitting there, like reading something or with a huge book or something like that.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it keeps a pressure on me. Oh my God, I think Chris will be like clinical instructor. It will be a good clinical instructor in the future or something like that.
Yeah.
But thank you for doing that, because sometimes it influences me to, you know, get the best out of me.
I love that you share that.
And you know, that's what you did was being a good example for me, because no, it really transcends through everyone in the class or in the batch, and you know,
thank you.
Made us more studious or made us read the book more and something like that. Thank you for that, Chris. Sure.
Yeah, and I love how you shared it, because I just wanted to connect it to the topic of mental health, because when we take aggressive care of our mental health, we are also giving other people permission to do the same. I love that. So when we work on our self-growth, our self-improvement, we are showing other people what's possible, right? So that's, you know, why that's so important. And, you know, one other thing I would say to myself is just to relax. That's it. Like, relax. Like, the 20s is supposed to be messy. You're not supposed to have everything figured out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. Be gentle on yourself. Like, have some compassion, and definitely, you know, work on any wounds that you've had in the past, like any trauma or whatever. Resolve those. Forgive who you need to forgive, and just love. I think love as much as you can, and as often as you can.
All right,
that's what I would say.
All right. Thank you for that, Chris. Really appreciate it. I think we're ending the podcast already. Do you like to shout out anyone? Do you want to greet someone?
I think just my family and to all my colleagues, you know, who I said goodbye to, and to all our college batchmates who are all over the globe. I'm so proud of everyone, you know, just building their lives, starting their families, building their careers. It really just warms my heart to see people
I know.
Actualize their dreams and just live their a big life and live a grand life. It's so nice to see. So if anyone wants to like learn more about what I do or connect with me, I am all over on social media at Chris Asabu.
Yes, and for sure.
If you go to my website, chrisasabu.com, I have a free guide on productivity. It's something to help people around productivity.
Wow.
It might be relevant to you. It's primarily for entrepreneurs, but it works for anyone. And lastly, I have a goal setting guide. It helps you set goals around all your life areas. So mental health, health. So that's physical, emotional, mental, spiritual health, relationships with your family, with your romantic relationship, with your friends, with your colleagues, your business, your finances, and fun and recreation. So that's called Goal Book. If you want to call, you can get it for free. It's at chrisasebo.com/goalbook. And of course, one last thing is if you want to listen to the podcast, it's all over on like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts.
Whatever. Actually, I'm a loyal subscriber, Chris, for sure.
Thank you. So that's at the Mental Arsenal Podcast, and I guess that's it. Thank you so much.
You know what, Chris?
Thank you for having me.
You know what, Chris? Just want to say this on the record, no. I'm really happy of what you are or what in state you are right now. I mean, you didn't choose to be on the traditional trajectory of our profession. You made a radical change. But seeing you being happy, being satisfied of what you have makes my heart warm. And
thank you.
I'm really happy for you, like genuinely.
Thank you.
And continue to inspire everyone. I know you.
Me too.
And we'll see each other soon, for sure.
Yeah. Please
All right. reach out. Yeah, for sure, man. Like, really appreciate this one. And
before I end this, just want to shout out my colleague, Rachel Emerson. Very lovely lady and an avid Chelsea fan as well. Let's go, Blues.
Paalam. Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.